One of the things that I think historically has been an issue with churches is the reluctance to be very blunt about it, and to I think it, when it, things involve sexual abuse, sexual subjects, people tend to want to avoid it. And the more blunt, the more honest you can be about it, and the more upfront and open, then the better off you are.
Churches are often a very open and trusting environment. But the fact is, it's very clear from the history of the last 10 years that schools and churches also attract a small group, a small but significant group of people who are there for the wrong reasons, and that includes predatory pedophiles or people who have other needs being met through contact with children.
Good evening. As Clay mentioned in the call to worship, we will be talking about a difficult subject, child sexual abuse. And part of that is we didn't just make this subject up. It's in connection to what we talked about last week as it relates to young people. If you were here last week, what we said is that young people bear the image and likeness of Christ. And the amazing thing about that is because they bear the image and likeness of Christ, then that means that in many cases, in many instances, if we as adults are willing to let them lead, we can see, catch a glimpse of who God is, different than how we might describe God. The question then becomes, what happens when that image and that likeness gets distorted? Specifically for our context today, what happens when it gets distorted through something as tragic as sexual abuse? So let me say this up front. Number one, I understand that this is a difficult sermon to hear. I can imagine that it's going to be difficult to sit through. And I can assure you, it's difficult to stand up here and preach it. But the reality is, the reason why sexual abuse is allowed to, the reason why it can exist and why it may exist in places like congregations and schools is because what we do is we turn a blind eye towards it. This kind of thing happens because we allow dark places to remain dark. We allow secrets to fester. Part of what we want to do in this community is to shine God's light in those dark places so that we can live by and see a different reality. So the prayer today is that God's light shines in the dark places so that we can see a different reality. So let's start off with some definitions. What is child sexual abuse? According to the American Medical Association, child sexual abuse is the engagement of a child in sexual activities for which the child is developmentally unprepared and cannot give informed consent. Child sexual abuse is characterized by deception, force, and coercion. There's an organization here in town called MOXA, which stands for Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. Here's how they define it. They say that child sexual abuse is the exploitation of a minor child to meet the sexual or emotional needs of an adult or older child. So you understand the dynamics here, right? Is what you have is you have a person who has power, an adult or an older child, who then inflicts his or her power on a younger person through sexual means for sexual gratification. That's the definition. Let's talk a little bit about how prevalent it may be. According to the Administration for Children and Families, in 2006, which is the latest figures that we have, in 2006, there were 905,000 reports of neglect or abuse. 905,000. So 8.8% of those were sexual abuse. So that translates to 79,640 cases were sexual abuse. Additionally, the figures that MOXA uses as it relates to this is to say that 1 in 4 females have been sexually abused, one in seven males. So if you use the figures from the Administration for Children and Families, that means that in 06, 113,125 women were sexually abused, 64,643 men were abused. To be even more localized in our numbers, and let me say this up front, I understand that statistics can be used in a variety of ways, and I understand that statistics are not across the board, because the reality is we may have that one in four here in our population, or we may not. We may have the one in seven, or we may not, but it gives us at least a starting point to understand how prevalent this is. So if we look at Jacob's Well specifically, we're a community of about 1,200 folks. That would mean that 150 females within our community have been abused, and 86 males within our community have been abused. If you just extrapolate the figures without understanding that there are lots of differences and discrepancies in there. Here's the reality. Even if it was just one person, even if it was just one person in our midst who had to experience something like sexual abuse, it would be important for us to stand up and talk about it. Because the reality is, this is not how God designed the world to be. Now, the other thing I want to say up front, because the question may be running through your mind, is, oh my gosh, has something happened here at Jacob's Well? Absolutely not. We haven't had any kind of experience or that, but the point is, what we want to do is to say that this is a community that wants to ensure that the most vulnerable among us are protected, and it will not happen here, so help us God. Part of why we want to address this then is because sexual abuse is, I want to say it unequivocally, it is sin. And you can imagine, you can come up with your own reasons why this is sin, but there are four things that I'd like to share with you that relates to the sinfulness of this act. Number one, child sexual abuse distorts the image of God both in the victim and the perpetrator. What is going on in that situation distorts how God has created the world to be. The second reason why this is sin is that it violates our communal responsibility to steward the life of our kids. Last week I mentioned that Mary and I, one of the things we firmly believe is not only are we entrusted with the care, nurture, and raising of our three girls, but part of why we feel so comfortable in a place like Jacob's Well is we firmly believe that each and every one of you are also entrusted with the care, nurture, and provision of our kids. And it gives me great hope that as you may see our girls, you may not have any conversations with them, but you may see them running down the halls, or you may see them at the 5:30 service. They usually kind of sit somewhere in the back if they come, that you know that part of your responsibility as a part of this community is to nurture them, to care for them. Sexual abuse violates that responsibility. It says that within our midst, there are some who are vulnerable and they can be taken advantage of. Third thing that relates to sin about child sexual abuse is that it violates the safe space that we are charged with creating. In addition to being a community where folks find rest and peace, we are a sanctuary for folks. This should be a place where they find safety. And when you have violations that go on to people, then that safety is infringed upon. And then the fourth thing, the reason why sexual abuse is connected to sin is that it renounces the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ because we allow the dark places to remain dark. I will say it again. The image here, the motif that hopefully you walk away with is this understanding that in secret places, sin can fester and can thrive. Part of the message of Christ is that God comes to us to shine a light on those dark places. What once was dark now becomes light. What once was secret can be redeemed. What I'd like us to do is go back and look at another one of the video shorts and see, so what, how is it that someone can infiltrate a community and perpetrate these kinds of things? So let's look at that now.
I have met a number of child molesters over the years, and what I am struck by is how, what really nice people they seem to be. That, you know, we have this idea of child molesters lurking in alleys with the raincoats and, hey kid, come over here type of thing, and I think that parents assume that it's somebody like that. But in fact, it's, there's the, you know, that is more rare. It's really somebody who has developed a trusting relationship with a child who might cross that boundary. So it's really, could be anybody.
Everybody was always amazed at what a great way with children he had. And then they'll go on to kind of not notice that there were all sorts of warning signs that that was not a healthy or a applaudable interest in children, but in fact masked a rather sick and destructive interest in children.
They get in situations like that, build the trust of the adults, which of course leads to the trust of the children, and usually that's when things start to happen. We call that the grooming process, where it may not happen within a few weeks or even a few months, but just building that kind of trust between the adults and themselves, that's how they gain access to the children.
The more serious and dangerous the offender, the more practice they will be at fading into the woodwork and not being noticed, because not being noticed is their stock and trade. Someone who spends a lot of time with children, isolates children, takes a special interest in troubled or needy children, but not in a kind of a general community way, but in an isolated special relationship way, is what you need to be looking for. And that's regardless of who the perpetrator is.
A lot of times it's a child that may present themselves as just the perfect victim. They may not be getting a lot of attention somewhere else. They may have problems in school. They may have problems at home.
The message there, right, is that part of what happens is places like churches, faith institutions, and schools allow folks to kind of hang out. And because they're a community that relies on volunteers, you have these folks who then volunteer in situations and they have ulterior motives. And so part of what organizations need to do on an organizational level is to take steps to say that it won't happen. Here's what we're doing at Jacob's Well, just so you have a sense that we are really committed to this. Number one, we have been doing this. We already are doing it, but we've decided we have become more stringent about enforcing it. But the first thing we're doing, we will do background checks on all volunteers who work with our young people. That's pretty standard. Additionally, what we have decided to do, because we take this seriously enough, is that we will do background checks on all staff who work at Jacob's Well, whether they interact with young people or not. So for instance, that means that I have to undergo a background check, even though I'm not directly related to our kids' community. The second thing, what we will assure is that when we, as a church, as a community, are doing something with young people, there will at least be two adults in the room with a young person at all times. If you'll notice, if you're here in the mornings at all, that if you go into our infant rooms, that's infants to two-year-olds, you'll notice that all the diaper changing stations are out in the open, not behind closed doors, so that if diapers are getting changed, it's done where others can see it. For our preschool kids, what we will ensure is that two unrelated adults will take children to the bathroom at any given time, and the door will always remain open. For our grade school kids, what we're saying is that one adult will take the young people to the bathroom, but they will not go into the bathroom with the young person. They will stand on the outside. The other commitment that we make as an organization is that whenever we are working with young people, whenever we're engaged with young people, that we will do it in an open space. The doors will remain open. In those instances where we have to be in rooms to close the doors because of sound or things like that, there will be a window that you can always see in. Again, the motif, the message there is that we want to make sure to shine a light in those dark places. Let's look at another kind of a video short, and then we'll come back and talk about implications.
Being a 13-year-old kid, the thought that never came to my mind was he now somewhere else where he was doing this to the other kids? I was just so grateful that I was safe and that that was past me. I thought that was the appropriate thing to do, was to just be quiet. I was scared. I was afraid that I wouldn't be believed, and certainly embarrassed.
They may be embarrassed to come forward. They may have been coerced not to say anything by the perpetrator. They may have come to believe in some way that it's their doing. They may feel ashamed to talk about it. There could be any host of reasons why they decide not to speak up.
The part that I know is that if you're a victim of sexual abuse as a child, you've been harmed. And it can manifest itself in so many different ways. I think for me, it was maybe lack of self-esteem, eating disorders, substance abuse. Probably the greatest harm that was done to me was not only the sexual abuse, but the spiritual abuse of realizing that I was never able to turn my life over to God and to trust Him completely.
The child makes an allegation, there should be a report made to social services right away. That's the first thing. And if social services does not feel it's in their domain to take care of the issue, then they will then refer it on to the police.
People need to know that these policies are not meant to make adults uncomfortable or to make them embarrassed or to feel like they're a suspect in something. These policies are a blessing, and they're meant to protect children.
So part of what you understand, as you heard from the victim there, is that there are things that organizations can and should do. A couple more things that I want to talk to you about what Jacob's Well as an organization is committed to doing. Number one, what we commit to doing is at the instance of a report by a person of child sexual abuse, we will investigate it immediately. We will not ignore it. We will not try to explain it away, and we will not brush it under the carpet. The second thing, the posture that we want to take to this is that we will believe children if an allegation has been made, because the reality and the facts are that this is not something that children lie about. The commitment that we're asking you to make as a member of our community is this. If you hear something from a child, you should alert someone on staff here at Jacob's Well so that we can immediately begin the investigation. And finally, the commitment that we make is that we will support our young people through this. We will not give them the message that this is something that they have to shoulder alone. This is something that we will walk with them. This is something that we will walk with them, and we will support them through this. Here's the reality. There are lots of sociological and organizational reasons why we need to address this issue. But we're not just an organization. We're also a community of faith. And I think that there are theological reasons why we should be talking about this and why we should be engaged in this issue. We're going to look here in a minute at a passage in Isaiah, and I want to be clear. I don't think that as Isaiah writes this, he has in mind this whole notion of sexual abuse. What Isaiah is talking about is oppression and what happens to people as they are experiencing oppression and what's God's role in that. I think it might speak into this subject. I actually believe it speaks into the subject very clearly. Let's look at the passage. It's Isaiah chapter 58, verses 6 through 12. Will you read it with me? Let's read together Isaiah 58, verses 6 through 12. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. You catch that image there? So part of what I want to ask you is, what's the image that you're catching from Isaiah as he's talking to Israel here? I'm not asking you to speak into the whole notion of how this connects to child sexual abuse. Really what I'm asking is, what is it that Isaiah is saying to us in the context of this passage? What are you hearing? Yeah, Gary. So Gary's comment is that part of what the Isaiah passage is doing is calling us to attention. Calling us to attention. In his case, he mentions that one of the folks who are most victimized are not just children, but children with disabilities, because it's hard for them to speak into that situation. He also mentioned that it's not only important for organizations to do background checks, but to continue to do background checks. So it's not a one-time thing. And we are in the process of establishing how often we will do that. We know that we are doing it more than once. Thank you. Other comments about the picture that Isaiah is painting for us in this passage? Yeah.
I hear that there's help and hope for the oppressed of any kind.
Okay, how do you hear that help and hope?
You see, you identify a problem and there's God there or some authority figure to help.
Okay, so what Jan's talking about is that there's help and hope for the oppressed. And part of that help and hope is rooted in the fact that God is there. Thank you. Yeah, Joe. So Jill's comment is that this encourages to not be afraid because God is present, because God is there. It's to say you don't have to be afraid, and that there is rest for those who are weary, for those who are oppressed. Other comments in terms of what Isaiah may be saying to us? Yes, Clay.
Self-focused. Isaiah almost exhorts us to turn our focus outward and find the light shine in our life as a result of that, which is refreshing.
Yeah. So Clay had two comments. First comment is that God doesn't create us to be in bondage. What he desires for us is freedom, and this whole notion of every yoke will be broken. And then the second thing is just this, when we're confronted with difficult situations or oppression, it's easy to turn inside ourselves, but the goal, but the encouragement is to turn out. And if you read this whole chapter, they're talking about fasting. And it seems that God is saying to Israel here, hey, good job, you're doing these things. But then there's this one moment where in Israel's fasting, what they do is they turn inside. They stop looking outside of themselves, but they look just at themselves. And then the 6 through 12 passage is then the encouragement to say, oh, but in the midst of your fasting, remember those who are oppressed around you. Other comments about how you might be hearing Isaiah tonight? Yeah. Yeah, so that's right. So the comment is that the call is for those of us who aren't oppressed, who aren't experiencing that bondage, to turn out and see how is it that we may look towards those around us and help them as they're struggling with certain situations. Absolutely. So you all understand here that Isaiah has some very poignant words for us. I think as it relates to sexual abuse, there are four messages that we can take out of this. And so if you'll permit me to kind of share what those four messages are. The first message, it's a message to victims who have experienced sexual abuse in their lives. The first thing that God says in this Isaiah passage is that God desires to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords that bind you. This is not how God intends for life to be. God's response to your cry is, here am I. And as difficult as it may be, God's asking you to lean into him and to accept the love and care of the community around you. If you see the image there, the image is of a well-watered garden in a sun-scorched land. What once was dry will now bring life. What once was scorched and ruined will now be restored. What once brought shame and kept you in the dark, God's light will redeem it. God has and wants a different reality for you. In verse 8 speaks to God's life breaking through like the dawn. And with God's light breaking through comes healing. God desires for you, those who have been victimized by sexual abuse, to be redeemed through this situation. And redemption comes through speaking about it. You cannot continue to keep it inside. You cannot continue to keep it in the dark places of your life. As a community, we want to stand by you and we want to walk with you. But here's the other reality. We can't do it all for you. If you heard the gentleman on the video, he says, this isn't just an issue of abuse. It's not just a physical situation. He said, it's a spiritual situation. My abuse directly influenced how I was able to see God. There are organizations in town, and there are people in those organizations who absolutely have been work with this on a day in, day out basis. And part of the encouragement for healing and redemption is for you to not only get the support of your community, but to go outside of here and get the necessary emotional, psychological, and physical healing that you need in addition to the spiritual healing that comes with that. I think the Isaiah passage, there's also a message to perpetrators. For those of you who have engaged in sexual abuse. You have victimized someone. Here's Isaiah's message to you. God desires to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords that bind you. This is not how God intends for life to be. See, what you have done in the dark must now be brought to light. What has happened in those dark places must not, cannot, and will not happen in this place of light, in this community that is Jacob's well. So help us, God. God's response to your cry for help is, "Here I am." God wants to take this yoke of oppression from you. For you, there is also redemption. But first, you must recognize the pain and agony that you have caused, and you must recognize that God's path for healing is different than what he would have for someone who's been victimized. You must undertake the difficult task of confessing this, and you must seek the psychological and emotional help that you need so that you can experience spiritual healing in this situation. There's a third message to bystanders. You see, the reality of this situation is that in instances of child sexual abuse, it usually involves a third party. Folks in this work talk about a triangle. There is a triangulation that happens between victim, perpetrator, and then there's usually a third angle, the bystander. Here's God's message out of Isaiah to bystanders. It begins the same way. To you, God desires to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords that bind you. This is not how God intends for life to be. For your pain and your guilt, God also brings healing. There is also redemption for you, from you, and that redemption comes from the recognition that you are or have been complicit, but your complicity is not the final word. The final word is that God cleanses you so that you can rebuild a different picture in a restored land. God has a different reality in mind for those of us who may be bystanders. And finally, in this Isaiah passage, as it relates to this issue, God has a message to the community that is Jacob's well. And it begins the same as with the others. God desires to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords that bind us. This is not how God desires life to be. So what we must do is we must shine the light in those dark places. If we are to be an authentic biblical community, then we must not allow the secret places to lord over us. Christ's light brings redemption, restoration, and repair. It will be a painful process, but through our resurrected Lord and Savior, what we will experience is Christ's ability to venture forward and press into this in ways that we didn't think were possible. So in our community, we must seek to rebuild what has been ruined. We must seek to raise the foundations so that in our midst, among our people, what we are the repairers of the broken wall. What we do is restore the streets so folks can dwell in the light of Christ. That last verse in Isaiah is that we repair the walls. We fix the streets so that folks can dwell. That verb dwell, do you understand that dwelling, the same God who was dwelling at the beginning of creation, hovering over the world before creation started, is the same God who was dwelling in the midst of the people that Isaiah was talking to, is the same God who dwells among us and points us to a different reality, is the same God who desires life to be different for those of us in our community who have experienced this oppression. Part of our role is to stand in the breach, to be the repairers of the broken wall, to be the restorers of the places that are crumbling, so that what we can do is to create a safe place again so that folks can dwell in our midst. God intends and desires a different reality. God is asking us to stand in that breach. God is encouraging us to shine a light in those dark places. With the help of Christ, we can do it. I'd like us to close our time together by praying this prayer together. Let's pray. The light of the Lord before us. The light of the Lord behind us. The light of the Lord above us. The light of the Lord beside us. The light of the Lord within us. Your love, O Lord, reaches the heights of the heavens. Your faithfulness fills the skies. How priceless is your unfailing love. All can find refuge in the shadow of your wings. Send forth your light and your truth. Let them guide us to you, that we may seek and find you as you have sought and found us. Amen.